Blog Talk Radio.
Russell Price morning show, pulling your eyelids open. We're pulling your eyelids open every morning, give it to you straight talk, no chaser. It's information that's hard to swallow, but good to know. We got a special guest this morning. Before we get started, I want to thank our sponsor, Tori's Restaurant. Tori's Restaurant is a restaurant that has been around for a long time. The 700 V Street Northwest. It tells you everything that soul food has to do. It has soul food. And what you need to do is go online now and order online because they're no longer open right now because of the pandemic. But what they're doing is basically letting people know that you can get it on Uber Eats, okay? So it's called Tori's Restaurant, 700 B Street Northeast. Northwest correction, and it's time for you to definitely come and get this thing, what I call awesome, man. It's awesome. Just make sure that you know what you're doing and make sure that you come and make sure that you get there because it's a restaurant like no other restaurant ever. It's a restaurant that's been in this town forever. I mean, it's been there forever. And so what you need to know is be there. Do not make a point for you not to be there. Just be there and tell everybody about Tori's Restaurant. On our newsmaker line, we have a special guest, one and only Leonard Hamm. He's a commissioner from Baltimore City. Leonard, are you on the air? Go ahead.
Yes, I am. Good morning. Russ, can you hear me?
I hear you, man. Fantastic. You're coming in loud and clear. You are a special guest this morning, and I want to thank you for taking the time out to bless our airwaves with your information, and tell us who you are, what you do.
Well, first of all, Russell, I have to, correct you. I'm a former Baltimore Police Commissioner. Currently, I am the Director of Public Safety at Coppin State University. I'm also an adjunct professor here at the University in Criminal Justice.
Oh, excellent, excellent. Tell us about your background and what you're doing now.
Well, I've been in law enforcement for about 47 years. Started in law enforcement walking a foot post on the midnight shift in Baltimore Police Department. About 30 years later, I ended up being police commissioner, rising through the ranks. I was director of public safety at Morgan State University, and also the chief of police of the Baltimore Public School System. So I've been like the chief of.
Your background, is that your background? You have a lot of static in your.
Hello?
Okay, hello, go ahead. We have some static in the background of your phone. Go ahead.
As I said, I've been the chief of four major police operations in Baltimore City, so.
That's. That's basically the thrust of my law enforcement career here in the city.
Excellent. How did you get to be in this book? What made you decide to write this book? What's your book about?
Well, my son was the inspiration for me to write in a book. My son is currently the chief of police of the Baltimore Public School System. I hired him 20 years ago. Now he's, you know, the chief of that agency. But he said to me, you know, Pop, guys want to know how you did it, how you went from walking a footpost to be police commissioner and, you know, be in charge of all these police agencies. So I decided to sit down and write that, you know, that journey. But as I was writing, as I was reading, I found out that the book really wasn't about police work, and it really wasn't about police, and it really was about how a person can go on a journey and end up being a successful person, whatever success is, you know, defined for them. And as the book got out, many people came up to me and said, man, you know, that's my story. I did that. So what it told me, Russell, was that successful people travel basically the same journey. They're parallel journeys, but they basically go through the same processes and the same levels to succeed, and that's basically what the book is about.
Excellent. People now, especially during the time that we're living today, it's important that people reach success. They need some kind of guide to know what success is. They need some kind of blueprint to find out what is success or how to get to be successful. So in this time right now, your book is more prevalent than ever. It's something that people need. Give us some points in the book that help people to be successful.
Well, first of all, I think that it needs to be stated that God puts that innate ability for you to be successful in you from the day of your birth, even before you come out the womb. It's placed in you. I think the problem is we don't know how to wrap our arms around it and be successful. And there are many guides out there how to do it. I mean, you can go to the Bible. The Bible is a guide to show you how to be successful. But basically all I did was, you know, took a look at my life and looked at some themes so that I could get those themes out there so people would be able to wrap their arms around it and, you know, create their own success, whatever that success is. And basically one of the things I talk about is your subconscious being the engine that really fuels you to be what you want to be. See, we're on the conscious level, people can give you so much information, and that information could be false, to the point that people can have you believe in anything that you want to be. However, it's your subconscious that really tells you what you're all about and what you're going to do. See, for the most of my life, I never knew I was a smart person until somebody told me that, man, you're smart. And that happened to me in about the seventh grade. So once I learned that, I put that in my subconscious, and my subconscious then determined who I am and what I am and what I'm going to be. And I never let that conscious mind, you know, detect who I am and what I'm going to be. That's one of the things that the book talks about. The book also talks about the importance of getting a mentor and having a mentor. What I also talk about in the book is that all your life you'll constantly have to make a decision as to whether you want to be popular or whether you want to be successful. To me, that simply means that you're going to follow the crowd and do what the crowd doing because that's the trend and that's what they're doing, or you're going to break away from that crowd and do what you know is the best thing for you. Keep it in mind, when you do that to be successful, you're going to have a lot of problems and people are going to hate you, dislike you and all that, but you can't worry about that because in the final analysis, once they see how successful you are, they'll start coming over to your side. That's just a few of the things that I talk about in the book.
That is a very valid point. Do you want to be popular or do you want to be successful? And most successful people have broke away from being popular. They're not part of the crowd. they do something outside of the crowd, and then they look up and they say, I went to school with that person. I remember him in high school. I remember her in junior high school. Look at her today. But when they were there with that person was not really hanging around them. They had an agenda, a focus of their life that they want to be something. I tell people all the time, you got people that say, I want to be a movie star, or I want to be a popular singer, but they don't want to leave the town they in to go to Hollywood. They want to stay right
yeah,
there
exactly.
with the people and try to make it in a town that they, it's ridiculous. But it's just, you must not really want it that bad. People who you see get on a bus with a ticket, man, $25 ticket, and go all the way to California, don't know a soul, but they're dreaming
right.
and they're hungry and they want to make it, and they make it.
Yeah, that's basically it. Look, I was raised in a very close-knit community called Cherry Hill. I love Cherry Hill. 99% black. The only white people in Cherry Hill were store owners, were merchants. And I loved it. It was safe. It was the cradle of my manhood. It embraced me. But I knew if I wanted to be successful, I had to get out of Cherry Hill. As much as I loved it, as comfortable as I was in that community, if I wanted to be successful, I had to leave. I had to leave. My chance came when I received a basketball scholarship to go to the Philadelphia College of Textiles and Sciences. It was a college in Philadelphia. And in a sense, that's where my journey started, and that's where my journey began. But having said all that, I had to leave that comfortable place of Cherry Hill. Else I would have never done anything. I would have stayed there, and I would have missed out on opportunities.
Well, you saw that vision. Tell us a little bit about the police department, because I'm a former police officer myself. But how did you get to be a police officer? But not more than that, how did you get to maneuver to the point where you became chief of police? That's very successful, but that's not easy to do in a police department. How did you maneuver yourself to get to the point where you became chief of police of a police department?
Well, it's a whole different story how I got to the police department. Let's just skip to the fact that I'm in the police department. Now, police officers weren't very popular in my neighborhood, but I needed a job. And I also knew that the Baltimore Police Department at the time, they were recruiting people. And I, having a college degree, being a black man, I realized that I was an attractive candidate to be a police officer. And I hadn't planned on staying, any more than 6 months or so. So I'm a police officer. I go to the police academy, and I discover that not only am I naturally good at law enforcement, but that I enjoyed it. And one of the things that I did was every position that I had, I wanted to learn it. I wanted to be excellent in it. So I worked at every position, working a foot post, working a police car. I wanted to be excellent at every single thing that I did. I never turned down an assignment. I don't care how mundane, how menial that assignment was. I took that assignment because there was something to learn from every assignment that you had, and I just kept applying. And what I didn't realize as I was going through that process, and it is a process to be as good as I possibly could be, people were watching me. I had no idea these people were watching me. These were some of the people who became my mentors. Edward Tillman, who was a police commissioner, past police commissioner. Edward Woods, who was a past police commissioner. And Bishop Robinson, past police commissioner. These guys were watching me and watching my progress, and I never knew it. And what was happening was they were giving me different assignments. Now, in the Baltimore Police Department, you had to request the assignments. That was a formal process that you had to, make out a report and all this. I never did that. I was moved by receiving a phone call at night stating, I want you to go here, I want you to go there. I said, well, I never put in for that, that position. Don't worry what you put in for. I want you to go. Yes, sir, I went. So that's basically how it happened. Many different assignments, never turned down any assignment, not looking to the next level, but always trying to master the level that I was in. And that's basically how it happened.
That is phenomenal because I'm telling you, based on police work and police departments, it's a old boy network kind of thing what I was experiencing. You had to be in the know, and by you being black, it was even harder to accelerate to the power of being a police chief. The police departments, and as you know today, they're being scrutinized for things that they did years ago that they can't do today. The police department is a totally different ball game today. Policing will never be like it was in the 70s, the 80s, or the 90s, or 2000. Things are going to be changing dramatically. What's your take on that as far as a police officer or a police chief?
Well, things have changed because society's changed and technology's changed. Good police officers should not be afraid of the change. At one point in my career, I was an instructor in the Baltimore Police Academy, and I kind of ran the Baltimore Police Academy also late on in my career. And one of the things that I taught my trainees was this. When you're out there on the street, when you're out there doing anything, imagine that there's a camera on you at all times, and that camera is projecting you onto a TV screen where people can watch. Imagine that. And, you know, for me, when I think about cell phones and all that stuff, I wish we had them when I was a young police officer doing all that young stuff, because then people would have gotten to see how good I really was. So that's the thing that I taught when I was in the academy. That's what we're into now. So police officers shouldn't worry about body cameras and all that stuff. Do your job with truth. Do your job the right way. And think, let me show people how good I really am.
That is a good philosophy because I agree with you 100%. When I was a police officer, I wish there was body cameras on me. I wish I would have had a cell phone. I wish I had VDOT cameras all over the city, all over PG County. I wish they had that because they could have saw how I was doing community policing back in the 80s, where it was not popular to be a community police officer. And I agree with you. Police officers today should not be nowhere afraid of technology. They should embrace it, do the best job they can do, and not ever do anything derogatory. We're going to take a break, and we come back with our one and only Leonard Ham. He is an extraordinary individual. This is Pulling Your Eyelids Open. We do that every morning. Pulling Your Eyelids Open morning show. We give it to you straight off, no chase. We'll be right back. Magazine, the hardworking man in marketing. On our newsmaker line, we have the one and only Leonard Ham. He is a former commissioner, but he is the author of a book called Ham's Rules. Tell us a little bit about the rules. What are the rules?
The rules are nothing more than themes. We talk about, you know, getting a mentor, what a mentor is all about. We're talking about that education is the equalizer. We talk about that education is a lifetime thing you're, you know, constantly learning. We're talking about you're different than most people. Everybody's different. And we talk about embrace that difference. Don't be afraid of it. Embrace it. You're different, you know. So, and those are some of the themes that we talk about. And there may be 21 of them or 22 of them as you go through the book. But these are things that every one of us have. You have these things when you're being formed in the womb. You know, like I said, the book is simply, a way for you to wrap your arms around it and embrace it. One of the things that I talk about is that we as a people, we're constantly misfocused, and we're constantly given information that takes us off the track. What's really important? Take this coronavirus right now. There's so much stuff that the president's saying, that the governor's saying, that this one's saying, you know, should I send my kids to school? Are schools going to open? Parents really don't know what to do, and all that information is kind of taking you off of what's really important. What's really important to me about all of this stuff is keeping your family safe and keeping you safe. If that means I made a decision to keep my kids home and homeschooling, then that's what we're going to do. If that means I'm going to have to stay off from work, you know, then I have to make arrangements on that job, and that's what I'm going to have to do. So, you know, we can't be misfocused on what's really important.
Well, in the time of the pandemic, the virus, if you don't understand self-preservation, if you don't understand the importance of your family, your life, your children, nothing else matters. This virus is real. And you have to protect yourself. You can't hate on somebody saying, well, you know, you can take your kids and send them back to school. Is the school safe enough for my kids to go back to school? You have to make that decision like you did. No, they're going to be homeschooled. I'm not doing that. You have to make a decision for yourself. Are you going to go out and go around crowds? You want to go out and party, socialize with people? You want to go to restaurants and sit down and have, you know, you have to say what's important to you. Do you want to live? Do you want family live? And you make a decision to self-quarantine yourself. Nobody has to tell me don't go outside. Don't go outside and socialize. I've got enough sense to know. I see people dying on the TV. I see this coronavirus, people who are in their ventilators and respirators and making their last dying declaration about I wish I would have listened. Who what kind of person don't have that kind of common sense? I mean, and the president of the United States, when he gets on TV and when he's talking, it's the most craziest thing, because he's supposed to be looking out for United States citizens. He don't care about anything at this point. It's crazy.
Well, you said it earlier, and I've come to the conclusion it's up to me to take care of me and my family. So I will look at the information, I'll digest the information, and then I will make a final decision what's good for me. You know, I realize that we have an election coming up in November. And I realize that a lot of people are saying stuff to either get reelected or to get elected. And I can't be caught up in that misinformation, and I can't be caught up in that foolishness that takes me away from my primary task. My primary task is to protect my family, protect myself.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah. So that's basically it, you know, as far as that's concerned. So those are just some of the things that we talk about in the book. And as I said, you know, we inherently have all of these things. You know, it's just, you know, I've tried to make it easy for you to, you know, wrap your arms around that. And what I also did was a complimentary book that I called a student workbook, where it works in conjunction with the main book, where a student will have his workbook. After reading a chapter, then he can go into his workbook and answer some questions, you know, for his own personal diary, his own personal log, so that later on he can keep that, you know, and in his own words or in her own words, be able to move along this journey that we call life. And to complement the workbook, I also wrote a teacher's manual, too, so that a teacher can help students with the workbook and also with the original book, too.
That take some calls. We got some people on the air that want to talk. One definitely want to speak to you. We're going to bring up a person that you know real good. On the air. Go ahead, Bush.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
I can hear you,
oh, yeah.
Coach. How you doing? What you out there on that track walking around?
Man, I'm on that track walking around, but let me just say this. Leonard Hamm is such a modest and humble individual. You have not scratched the surface on his accomplishments in terms of as an athlete, as a law enforcement person, and as a citizen. First of all, Russell, Leonard Hamm was an all-city basketball player. That's the first thing. Won a championship, as he stated, gets a scholarship, but when he goes to college, he finds out that the scholarship is not just basketball, but academics. Okay?
Yeah,
and
that's true, Coach. It was an academic scholarship. I did pretty well, and actually what they did, they took my athletic scholarship and converted over to an academic scholarship, but they did that without telling me.
That's right. And then the other thing, Leonard is a man of the people. When I first met him, he was sitting in a restaurant eating. We were introduced. I looked around and said, man, where's your security? He said, I don't need security. This is my town. This is my people. And if things get a little funky, Coach, I can fight. But I'm telling you, this guy is salt of the earth. He's great. And if Baltimore, the new administration coming in, if they have good judgment, they'll bring him in as a counselor or as an advisor. Because what Baltimore needs is a Leonard Hamm. And I'm going to get out the way. I'm going to let y'all do it. Two of my very best friends in life, Russell Price and Commissioner Leonard Hamm. Let's vote. And Russell, by the way, let the folks know that Leonard Hamm is one of the cleanest, best dressers that I know. So let them know that as well.
Coach.
Well, for you to say he's the best dressed man, individual, coming from you, Coach, he's got to be a best dressed, a dapper dad, man. He got to be a dapper individual.
Wow.
Because you know fashion. If you say he's a dapper person, man, then he's got to be a clean person in the DMV.
Well, Russell, you know, all that was worked out beforehand between me and Coach. Coach, the check is in the mail. Thank you very much. You did good.
Much love to both of you. Thank you.
Thank you, man.
Fantastic. That's the one and only Coach Butch McAdams. He has a talk show also. But he's a wonderful individual, and he's a person in the Baltimore area. Funny show also. So Coach knows Baltimore, and he knows individuals. So it's a pleasure and an honor to have you on the Newsmaker Lounge, Butch. We have another caller coming up. Episode 443-9384. You on the air. Go ahead. Oh, you on the air. Go ahead. And tell us a little bit about where the college you were playing basketball. Yeah.
What was your question? What the college that I went to?
Right.
I went to the Philadelphia College of Textiles and Sciences. It's in Germantown, Philadelphia. It's now called Jefferson College. They changed the name to Jefferson University. It was a college that was organized and founded by garment makers in New York City, where they would, you know, and textile workers and textile industry in New York City. They built that school, bought that property, built that school so they could send their kids to learn about textiles. They also had an outstanding basketball program, and the coach came down and was doing some recruiting and happened to see me and, you know, offered me a, you know, scholarship to go up there. Liberal arts school, well, textile school, 4,000 people in the school. When I first went up there to the school, there was only 6 black people in the school. But And that was like a culture shock for me, you know. But the president of the university was a great man, a great man. And he looked at me one day as I was walking campus, and he said, asked me what was wrong. And I told him, you know, black people, I don't feel comfortable. So he says, how can we change that? I told him, give me a budget and let me go out and recruit from the Philadelphia public school system to get some black kids up here. And he did that. He gave me a budget. He did that. And we went out and we did some recruiting. And when I left the school, when I left, it was 156 black people up at the school. So I have to thank the president. His name was Burchard Haywood. And that's in the book, too. So we had an outstanding basketball program, and we ended up winning the Division II championship in 1970. So it was pretty – I had a pretty successful stay at that university, but I was determined that I was going to do 4 years and that I was going to complete my time, that I didn't give a – you know, I didn't care how difficult it was personally and socially and all that. It was I was going to complete that school and get my degree, which is what we did.
Excellent, excellent. I'm familiar with that school. I was born and raised in Philadelphia, man. I remember, you had to be a prestigious individual academically. You was not no what they call chopped liver. I mean, and to be black also, so you was really someone way back in the day was academically astute. You were not the everyday black person walking around. Believe me, you wasn't.
Well, but believe it or not, you know, a lot of people can knock the Baltimore public school system if they want to, but I received an outstanding education in the Baltimore public school system from elementary school to junior high school to high school. My education was absolutely outstanding, and it left me able and ready to handle, you know, the curriculum and the rigors, you know, of college. So I had no problem whatsoever. Now, one of the things that happened was, you know, there were some assumptions made. The assumptions were, because I was black, because I came from a public school system, that I automatically had to go to remedial reading. And I said, no, I'm not going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So my coach came to me and said, you know, big guy, here, you know, you're not going to a remedial reading. I said, I'm not going, coach, because I don't need to. He said, well, what are your grades going to look like? I said, I'll tell you what, after the first quarter, then we'll come back and talk about my grades. After the first quarter, the coach came to me and said, big guy, you was right. You didn't need to go. I said, I know. Remedial reading, man. Can you imagine that? Remedial reading. They automatically assume that because I'm black, because I come from a public school system, that I couldn't read. We got to take you to a remedial reading. I was insulted, to be quite honest with you.
Wow. Wow.
And
you knew your worth. That's one of the things.
Oh, absolutely. Again, because my subconscious told me that. See, that's that conscious mind, you know, telling you you're black, you come from a public school system, so you must can't read. That's the conscious mind telling you that. My subconscious mind told me all my life, you are a magnificent animal. You are great. That was my fuel. So how dare you tell me that I need to go to remedial reading because I can't read? It happens to people every single day, Ross.
Oh, no question. People believe or don't have self, what I call self-belief in themselves. They don't understand who they are or what they are or what they can be, and they associate with people who does not uplift them. They bring them down, and before they know it, they not nowhere near their potential, who they could be, because they were told by somebody. Well, their association means something. Who you associate with means something. Either you become like them or they become like you. But if you associate with somebody who doesn't even know your worth, you don't know your own worth, and your life's not going to be right. You know, but association means something.
I agree.
We're going to take another break. When we come back, we want to talk about how to get the book and where you know, is the book available online, or is it something that you can order, or is it, or you can get, can hear an excerpt from it. We'll be right back with the Pulling Your Eyelids Open Morning Show. Magazine, the heartbreaking man in marketing, and on our newsmaker line, the one and only Leonard Ham. Tell us about how to get the book, where to get the book, and
well,
how
you can
do
you can go to Dorrance Publishing, Dorrance Publishing. Go on their site, and you'll be able to get the book. Or you can go on my email address. That's hamrules1. HAMMRULE, #1@gmail.com, or you can go on my Facebook page and you'll be able to get the book.
Give us your Facebook page, your Instagram,
Hamm,
your Twitter, anything you want to put out right now so they can contact you or text you, or give us your all your websites. I mean, your website, your email,
well,
address, your
if you want to contact me, the best way to get me is on my email address, which is hamrules, HAMMRULE, #1@gmail.com. If you want to reach me and get the book, that's probably the quickest and the best way to do it.
Excellent. This has been a pleasure and an honor to have you on our newsmaker line. I tell you, we need more men like you. In this age right now, especially in 2020, black men of your caliber is needed more than ever. You walk the walk, you talk the talk, you had education, you saw the vision of being educated years ago, and you pursued it, but also more than that, you pursued a career in law enforcement. But you took it to another level where you were going to be the best law enforcement officer you could be. But then you took it to be a commissioner. Tell us, give us an idea of what a commissioner of Baltimore, what is a commissioner of Baltimore, what do they do?
Well, basically, you're the chief operating officer of a multimillion-dollar business. That's basically what you are. And, you know, you're responsible for helping the community solve its problems. Your responsibility is for at least 3,500 people, their well-being and their salaries. And you're responsible for the well-being of every meter, centimeter, of property in the state of Baltimore, and everybody that comes in and out of that state of Baltimore, you know, and that city of Baltimore, during the course of 24 hours. What I used to do was I used to go to a certain location in the city that overlooked the harbor and say, my gracious, I'm responsible for all of this. And that's basically what you are. You're responsible for the safety and well-being of the city. You know, and you're given an army, you're given a navy, and you're given an air force. You know, we had helicopters, we had marine units, and of course you had our police officers riding around in police cars. So, you know, you're given an army, navy, and an air force, and your job is to accept the responsibility of seeing all that stuff works right, as well as keeping people safe. However, you know, one of the things that I also tried to do was bring together other agencies so that we could help the community solve its problems. The state's attorney's office, for example, the mayor's office, we had a criminal justice coordinating council that the mayor put together, and all of these various agencies of criminal justice would get together and try to, you know, solve some of the problems that was going on in Baltimore. You know, so it's about being a part of that. It's about being a part of the business community also. So it's to be honest with you, I absolutely enjoyed it. I think it's probably one of the best jobs I ever had. I enjoyed it. The part that I didn't really like was dealing with the politicians. I really didn't like that part. But for the most part, it's probably the best job I ever had.
Well, Baltimore, the politicians in Baltimore seem to, I don't know what the situation is with politicians in Baltimore, but they basically were not really in the right frame of mind as far as being a true politician for the city. Seemed like you had a lot of situations with the politicians. Their mind wasn't right. They didn't. I guarantee they didn't have the attitude you had, where you try to do the best and be the best and be honest. And they didn't have that type of attitude. Seemed to me. And Baltimore seems to be a little bit behind. Tell us what do you see the future of Baltimore going? Where's it going? By you being a commissioner of Baltimore, a police chief of Baltimore, where do you see Baltimore going in the future as far as Baltimore life and as far as them being abreast and being up to date and making a change in the city, where do you see the city going?
Baltimore is going to be fine, Russ. Baltimore is going to be fine. Baltimore is a tough city that's reinvented itself at least four different times since I've been here. You know, it's a matter of us getting the right people in leadership positions to make the kind of decisions that are for the best for the city and not, you know, selfish decisions that's being made to benefit one person or a group of people or, you know, people like that. If you come to Baltimore, you will see so much construction going on, so much housing going on, there's so many cranes over the city. So there is some people somewhere who realizes the value of this town. So I have a lot of hopes for this town. This town is about neighborhoods, and neighborhoods are coming together, pulling together in spite of politicians. It's the people, man. It's the neighbors who are now coming together and doing some things. And you was thinking about black men, for example. I purposely surround myself with black men who are absolute eagles. They're doing good stuff. They're doing positive stuff. Don't want a lot of publicity. Just do the stuff simply because it needs to be done, you know. So, so I feel good about the city, and I feel good about the young people. God bless these young people who are walking around protesting for the right reason, not trying to be destructive, but for the right reason. And I think that finally, someone is beginning to listen to these young people, not just to placate them, but really listening to what they have to say and what their concerns are. So I have a lot of hope for the town. I feel good about the town.
Excellent, because I sometimes I used to worry about Baltimore. I'm in Washington, D.C., and it's only 45 minutes away, but it's like night and day. You drive up to Baltimore, you come over the bridge, and you get into Baltimore, and you say, where am I at? I mean, it was like a new... it was like you're going back in time or something. It was never, to me, it didn't appear to be an upscale moving forward city. It seemed like it was a two steps behind. So I'm glad you have an outlook and a vision for that city to be on a move upward, because it's not that far from Washington, D.C., so it should be on a move upward. The phone lines are lit up. If anybody want to have anything to say to the former commissioner, you can speak now. You're on the air, 9384, you're on the air, or 6437, you're on the air. Before we go to our closing statements, I have him go to his closing statements. But I'm telling you right now, you have done good works. You can be proud of yourself. Your family can be proud of you. Your son, For you to hire your son, I want to touch on that for a minute before we go to your closing statements. For you to reach back and groom your son, or have your son see the vision to follow in his father's footsteps, where he got the education, he was able to take a job that you had opened that he could fill, but then he did it to the point where he became a police chief. What was the actual thing that you instilled in your son to see the vision to even want to be what you were?
Well, first, I had no idea that's what he wanted to do. I never planned it in him and put it in his head to be a law enforcement person, to be a police officer. But he would say to me, he'd say, "Pop, don't you remember me, you know, always wearing your police hat, always wearing your police shirt?" I say, that was just a little boy, you know, acting out. I had no idea because I never pushed it. I never encouraged him to do any of that. When he got out of the Navy, after serving in the Navy, I said, "Now what do you want to do?" He said, "Well, you know, I like to try this law enforcement thing." So I said, "Okay." So he started working with an agency. You know, they weren't armed. They were, you know, like guarding in a harbor. And he found out he enjoyed it. So, you know, we had openings at school police. He applied, and he was hired. Now, there was a person in that agency, school police, who said that it was nepotism that you did it. I said, "No, it's only nepotism if he's directly under me. It's not nepotism if I hired him." "Oh, no, it's never." I said, "Well, I'll tell you what. I will leave as a chief, and then he can stay." "Oh, no, we didn't mean that." I said, "Well, that's what I mean."
Mm-hmm.
So they backed off and left it alone.
Left it alone. Good.
Left it alone. Just stupid stuff, man.
Yeah, this crazy. Well, we're going to take our last break when we come back with the closing statement. This is the Russell Price, publisher of Be There Magazine. This is the Pulling Your Eyelids Open Morning Show. We pull your eyelids open where the ghost can get it, the truth. We let you know the real deal, Holyfield. This particular talk show will let you know what is real, where to go, who to call, how to get there. We'll be right back with the one and only. This is a gentleman that, if you don't know him, when you don't get his book, then you're missing yourself. You're doing yourself an injustice or not really reading something that's help you. We'll be right back.
First of all, Russell, you know, I want to thank you for having me on the show. And I want people to understand that there's no magic bullet. There's no magic program to get us, you know, where we want to be and where we need to be. It takes individual work, us working together, and it takes our people, black people, to understand we have the wherewithal to be succeed. If we stick together and help each other, we can do it. We don't need anybody else to do it for us. We can do it ourselves. We did it once, and we can do it again. So I want to thank you for having me on the show. Appreciate it.
Again, give us your website and your email address, how to buy the book.
That's Ham Rule, HAMMRULE, number1@gmail.com.
Again, this is Pulling Your Eyelids Open. I'm the host of the show. You'll be here every morning at 10 o'clock. We pull your eyelids open. Thanks to our sponsor, This particular show is sponsored by Tori's Restaurant, 700 B Street Northwest. The Get Tori's Restaurant, you cannot go there now. It's closed due to the pandemic. However, you can order food from Uber Eats, Postmates, all these places online, you can order food. So if you want that soul food breakfast or you want that whatever you need for as far as wholesome, real soul food, go to Uber Eats and order something from Tori's Restaurant. And make sure that you support these black businesses in the time of the pandemic. It's more needed now than ever. If you want to be a sponsor for our radio show, give us a call at 202-445-1131. Again, my name is Russell Price. The name of the show is Pulling Your Eyelids Open. I'm the heartbreaking man in Marketing. See you Monday morning.